Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad to have you with us here today. I appreciate you joining us. I've got a great guest with us today who's a really prolific author and done a lot of neat things, Dr. Anita Knight, who's an associate professor here at Liberty University. So welcome to the podcast, Anita.
Thank you so much, Dr. Knapp. I appreciate that generous introduction, and I'm happy to be with you today.
Oh, well, I'm grateful to have you. I know you've written a number of different books, and you present a lot around the country. Could you give our listeners a little description of yourself and maybe your a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I teach, counseling at Liberty University, and I taught on campus for about 12 years and now teach online. I really enjoy teaching the research methods and program evaluation courses and helping students make friends with research, so to speak, and find topics that they enjoy. My research interest has been in the area of attachment theory, and I'm a highly reliable certified coder of the Adult Attachment Interview, the AAI for short, through Mary Maine and Eric Hesse's program at UC Berkeley. I help mentor a research team with Dr. Hinckley, Dr. Sibsey, and Dr. Johnson. And we work with different students that are interested in attachment and motion regulation and related topics. Right now we've been doing a study on empathy and how to enhance counselor empathy. And one of my other goals has been in, you know, therapeutic writing. So my background is in English. So my most recent book that released a couple years ago was The Mr. Rogers Effect, Seven Secrets to Bring Out the Best in Yourself and Others from America's Beloved Neighbor. And I learned so much on that qualitative study of Mr. Rogers. And then more recently, my next book coming out is called The Four Relationship Styles. And in between writing and teaching, we have two four-legged children, two toy poodles that are really sweet and friendly lap dogs, and I like to do ballroom dancing, and I could go on and on, but
that's great. I mean, it's great for the listeners because you get a real sense for people on the program when you tell more about your life like that, and that's great. I love dog. I have two dogs at home as well, and so that's pretty cool. So I know you've written a ton, and but you present a lot. And like you said there, your first book was The Mr. Rogers Effect, about Mr. Rogers, the old TV show, and we all love to watch, and taught us all those good social skills and everything. And then your newest book is The Four Relationship Styles. How are those two books connected? Because I think you told me previously that there's sort of a connection between those two books.
Yeah, I really appreciate you looking to connect those dots. I think, interestingly, a lot of people think Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He was this mild-mannered television host. But there's some people that don't realize he was so much more than that. And in an American Counseling Association blog, they call him America's Children's Television Therapist. Because he was trained by some of the greats in developmental psychology. You know, Dr. Margaret McFarland was his clinical supervisor for his counseling class. And she worked alongside some of the big names in developmental psych. Think of, Eric Erickson. She worked with Eric Erickson, who was a big player in developmental theory, Benjamin Spock. And so he was mentored by some of the best in developmental psychology. And he was very intentional and made it a point to embed all this developmental psychology into his work and make his programming therapeutic for children to help them grow and help them develop. And, attachment theory, of course, is a developmental theory. And, one of the key ideas that John Bowlby, the developer of attachment, talked about is the idea that attachment is active from the cradle to the grave. You know, it's throughout the lifespan, or as Dr. John Cooley likes to say, from the womb to the tomb. This is something that is active. We need our attachment relationships. And one of the things that Mr. Rogers was a pro at is he could help people feel more secure. Mm-hmm. And actually, he did a really, every time he spoke, like at a graduation or when he received a television award, there was always this special exercise he'd like to do with people. It was pretty short. I call it the 10-second transformation. Would you like to try it together here?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, great. So we'll just adapt it for our setting. But so Mr. Rogers used to speak to his audience and first acknowledge, you know, where you are. So if many listeners are interested in mental health, they're doing the work to invest in their mental health, to learn about mental health resources, to take time to invest in these podcasts and take time to listen and learn and grow. You are contributing to the literature with incredible books like Healthy Depression and mentoring students and faculty as a dean. But chances are none of us got to where we are today without people along our journey who loved us into being who we are. Mm-hmm. And those people could be nearby, maybe in the room with us. They could be far away, or they might even be in heaven. But could we take a moment, just 10 seconds, to think about those people who loved us into being? I'll keep the time. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Knapp, may I ask you if you feel comfortable sharing who comes to mind for you when you think about those that loved you into being?
Yeah, there's two people that come to mind quickly. It's my mother and my maternal grandmother, because when I was really young, I had a speech impediment and I didn't read well, and they very much encouraged me and helped me succeed.
Oh, that's so neat to think about.
Yeah.
What a difference they made in your life. And the two people came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of my my memes as well. I keep a picture of her close by, but she really loved the Lord and made a great difference in my life as well. And, you know, the thing is, when Mr. Rogers would do that exercise, he would help us in those moments. When I do this with students, I often ask them kind of what feelings came up for you as you thought about the persons who loved you into being. And a lot of times the feelings that they share are really positive. They'll say they felt warm, or they felt loved, or they felt cared for. And there's a lot of different ways of saying they felt secure. And then the next question I asked them, and I learned this from Jude Cassidy, who wrote in the Handbook of Attachment, is how do you behave when you feel those things? Warm, secure, loved, cared for, supported. And we get a lot of positive adjectives like friendly, helpful, kind. And Jude Cassidy said she used to keep a quote in her office and at home that said, and she's a key player in attachment research who contributed to the Handbook of Attachment, and she said that this quote says, do what you would do if you felt secure. And I think, you know, Mr. Rogers really helped people to feel secure and to act secure, and he encouraged them to really think about those people who love them into being who they are and try to bring that energy and that part of themselves into the world, because that's also the part of ourselves that helps us to care about our neighbors and love them into being. And so I think the connection in part is that Mr. Rogers was really a pro at helping people feel more secure. And a lot of people, it's funny, you know, writing a book, some people will say, oh, you know, I had one lady who told me when I was a little girl, I wanted to marry Mr. Rogers, or another who said, oh, I always wanted Mr. Rogers to be my dad.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there's a lot of positive emotion that comes up for people talking about Mr. Rogers, but I think underneath that even is that sense of security that he can, he had the capacity to help people move towards a more secure way of relating, which is at the foundation of attachment theory. And the four relationship styles really builds on the science of attachment theory and how to build those secure relationships and make the most of our relationship styles.
Yeah. Well, what I like here is you're just illustrating for the listeners how this isn't just some dry theory, you know, the attachment styles, which sometimes I hear it described that way, but you're giving demonstration here of how Mr. Rogers like used these and applied them with little kids and how we can apply it with others. But, you know, it's funny. We talk about the four attachment styles, and I know some of the listeners to the program today know about, you know, like maybe they have a graduate degree in one of the mental health fields, but some people might not be as familiar. Could you describe for the listeners like what the relationship styles are?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great point. So for those listeners with a more academic background or who maybe have a psychology or counseling degree, we might say they're synonymous with attachment styles. But for those that aren't familiar with attachment, I describe them differently. Perhaps the five love languages meets the Enneagram, or the five love languages meets attachment theory. Uh-huh. So the four relationship styles really provide a typology and a language for our relationship dynamics, and a language to describe how we approach relationships that's active from the cradle to the grave. And they also inform an important point, whether we move toward connection and emotional intimacy or whether we move away. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, even beyond romantic attachment, attachment has implications in all of our relationships. And even with parent-child relationships, there's been, in some of the AAI research we've seen, there's been over 70% accuracy in predicting the attachment style of the next generation. Right? So they interviewed pregnant moms, and then they watched how their children behaved in a research project we call the Strange Situation, because children are brought into a nursery with strangers, and then they observe the child's behavior when their parent departs, but they pay even closer attention to the child's behavior upon reunion when the parent comes back. So do they move towards the parent? Do they move away? Do they get kind of tangled up? They were able to identify these different attachment styles. But interestingly, with over 70% accuracy, they could predict what the child would do more than a year later, you know, while they're calling around in the nursery, based on how the mother, when pregnant, answered those questions. So with 70% accuracy, that's pretty high for inferential statistics. Oh, yeah. So it's pretty amazing.
That is great. And, you know, I was thinking, too, as we're just talking, everything you're describing, makes sense to a lot of people, and attachment theory makes so much sense. But you really describe all of this in a lot greater detail than what listeners are going to hear on the radio today. Your newest book is called The Four Relationship Styles, and then the subtitle is How Attachment Theory Can Help You in Your Search for Lasting Love. And this is a book that's about to be coming out. Is it available yet?
Yes, it's available for pre-order now. You can order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And there's several pre-order bonuses. I think if you email us in, we can get you on the list to get a free audiobook.
Okay.
But it releases January 23rd.
Okay. And you listeners, this is with Baker Books, and it's the title again is The Four Relationship Styles, How Attachment Theory Can Help You in Your Search for Lasting Love. So there's a lot more detail from Dr. Knight, in this book. So I know a lot of the listeners would probably love to get a copy of that, and that would be great. But in the title of your book, I noticed you're not just describing this in a theoretical way. You're applying it to relationships and how it affects mental health. So let me ask you, what makes relationship styles important with respect to mental health?
Right. You know, that's a great point. I think they are very important, and we're wired for community, we're wired for connection, uh-huh. and our relationship styles really contribute to how we do community and connection and how we show up in those relationships. And, you know, in fact, Basil van der Kolk, who's known as America's foremost trauma expert, mm-hmm. One of the things that he's mentioned is this idea that, with APA and sometimes we emphasize the trauma related to when people have experienced military trauma or they've experienced a horrific car accident or uh-huh. we sometimes think of those kind of traumas. But one of the things van der Kolk mentions is that actually most of the trauma we see is interpersonal trauma, is trauma from our relationships. And so this has great implications for attachment and for our relationship styles. And, you know, there's a relationship style in the text that we call the firefighter style. And this person has literally walked through so many fires. And so they've developed a resilience. They've developed perhaps a tough exterior. They've been burned a few times. But one of the things about relationship styles and attachment theory is that it gives us hope. The research shows you're not stuck with the relationship style you have. You can make it more secure. So you can become higher functioning within the style that you have. And every style has strengths and challenges, or you can even shift to perhaps a different relationship style. So I think, you know, one of the things that makes it important is the hope that it engenders, as well as the implications for trauma treatment and for relationships. Dr. John Gottman, who's been who's done a lot of leading research on couples work, one of the things he talks about, one of the key parts of building that sound marital house is turning towards. He calls it couples turning towards each other. That's essentially attachment. Secure attachment involves turning towards connection. And so a lot of different implications for attachment work and mental health.
Okay. That makes sense. And I like the way you use these examples to illustrate the relationship styles. So you say the firefighter, and I remember you mentioning to me that the other names you give them is the investigator, the security guard, and the networker. And it really, it makes it more understandable to the average listener, because some of these more academic-y, you know, dry, you know, styles, you know, that maybe Bowlby used to describe to begin with wasn't quite as relatable. But when listeners hear that, they hear these different styles, relationship styles, they might be going, oh, well, that's cool, but how does it relate to me? Do you describe in your book how people can figure out what their relationship style is?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning the metaphors, because I do think that's, you're right. That gives a great picture that people can relate to. And yes, to identify what your relationship style is, chapter 2 in the book includes a statistically validated quiz that we worked with a panel of attachment experts and a statistician to create. And so that'll be part of, I think it's chapter 2 or chapter 3. I've got to double check that. But it's towards the beginning of the book, you can identify what your relationship style is. We're also working on a mini version that'll be available on social media. It won't be as comprehensive, but it can give you an idea of which way you lean, and then a more comprehensive version that we're planning to use in research. But the book will be the best place to find a version that can allow you to, within less than 10 questions, identify what your style is with a pretty good degree of confidence.
That's great. And that keeps it practical for the listeners, too, because then instead of this all being theory, you bring it on home to yourself. And how do I relate to people? How is this going to help me or make my life more difficult if we understand ourselves, right?
Right, right. Yeah, because, each of the styles does have challenges and difficulties, as you mentioned, but also different strengths that have uniquely been born from their types of orientations and experiences that they've had through relationships. And we can tend to, you know, undervalue our strengths and overvalue strengths that we don't have. And so that really helps us get a clearer picture of what some of our strengths are and how they can help us to connect and contribute.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to give away the whole book. I mean, people need to, there's a lot of content in here that people need to read for themselves. But let's give them a little bit of a taste of it here. Could you maybe give an example of one of the relationship styles in the book, and like what are some of the strengths and challenges associated with that style?
Sure. Do you have one that you'd prefer to hear about between the four?
Which one do you tend to see more in people that you work with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I see a lot of the investigator. So with the investigator tends to get preoccupied with relationships and but sort of put on their investigative cap and analyze and look for clues that their romantic partner does not love them. It's almost like the investigator that's seeking to crack a case. They're looking for every clue they can find about their partner's love. It's as if they have an internal dialogue where they're holding a flower or a daisy and picking off the petals, saying, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me, he loves me not. And they're kind of oscillating perhaps back and forth between being convinced that they are loved. For the investigator, in childhood, they tend to have had experiences that were marked with inconsistency. So in other words, the most consistent part of their childhood was that it was consistently inconsistent. Uh-huh. So they may have had caregivers that were sometimes very loving and present, but then other times were not. So they may have been neglectful, or they may have just been, you know, perhaps they suffered with depression, or they struggled with overwork, or they struggled with a number of different things that kept them from being present and responsive to the child consistently. And so then that may be an experience where they had to develop those investigative skills to be able to learn what they could expect from their caregivers. And so then that becomes a strength, right, that they're able to be sensitive to others' needs, be more aware of maybe others' emotional states and what to expect based on those emotional states, and to look for those cues. On the other hand, their speech tends to be more passive. So you might hear, and we've seen this in some of the research on the adult attachment interview, you might hear them use language like, you know, this, that, and the other, that kind of a thing, that sort of a thing, right? Where rather than seizing upon the word to express their idea, they're engaging in more passive speech. We might hear language that's more prone to exaggeration. Oh, he always does this, she always does that. That can also be indicative of some preoccupying anger. And a lot of times these individuals have a bit of a preoccupation with some frustrating experiences of the relationship, or even maybe fearful experiences from childhood. And the investigator is tending to be higher in anxiety, but lower in avoidance. So they move towards connection, but sometimes they get tangled up.
That makes sense. I mean, I know we probably all could, you know, think of people in our lives who sort of match that description you just gave. I totally get it. Well, let me ask, you know, there's a lot of people listening who are therapists or people who are in training to be a therapist of some sort. Let's just say they are that investigator type or an insecure attachment style. How do you work with a person like that to sort of help them learn to be more secure in relationships? Like, what are the some of the mechanisms or little tricks, per se, that you as a therapist use to help the person like that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, the goal at the end of the day is to move towards more security and adaptation. I think one of the first steps starts with awareness. So I think identifying, trying to be aware of, yes, we do have relationship styles, and what is our relationship style? How is it showing up in relationships? One of the things about one of the more secure styles, like the networker style, is that it's often characterized by strong or, you know, some level of metacognitive monitoring. Uh-huh. And metacognitive monitoring, as you know, is just a fancy way of saying, you know, thinking about our thinking. And so one of the things with self-awareness is we help people to think about their thinking. So starting with identifying their relationship style and then moving towards increased metacognitive monitoring. So metacognition, you know, thinking about thinking, and then monitoring. So one of the differences between maybe someone who has a really, you know, secure, you know, networker style narrative where they're telling you this vivid story and you can really get a picture of what their childhood attachment relationships were like, versus someone maybe who has more of a firefighter style, who's been burned a lot and may have experienced some trauma and have a harder story to tell, is that the difference is that when you hear the networker talking, you might hear them say something like, well, you know, you asked me if I had, you know, what my loving experiences with that parent were from childhood. But as I'm trying to come up with them, I realize I'm thinking of experiences that were maybe not as loving. So maybe I'm wanting to remember it really as more loving than it was. Now, that's an example of metacognitive monitoring, because the person's in the moment and they're sort of monitoring what they're saying and evaluating it and looking for maybe logical fallacies and trying to be a collaborative communicator to answer your question. And so when we're working with someone like that in therapy, there's a lot of different approaches we could use, but I'll just give one example from like a gestalt approach, where we might stop in this moment and say, as you're talking about your grandmother and your mom and what an incredible difference they made in your life, what feelings are bubbling up inside of you in this moment? And, you know, maybe where do you feel that in your body, and what is that like? And as we begin to connect the thoughts and the physiological sensations and pause and monitor what's happening in the present, increase awareness, you move towards those secure states. We can also bring in some strategies like from motivational interviewing, where we appeal to the part of the client that feels secure and build upon that. You know, in the book, we talk about each of the unique styles and how they each have their challenges and struggles. And so the path looks a little bit different based on a client's, you know, unique experiences, whether they've experienced trauma, what their window of tolerance is. And so we have to fine tune things. But there are a couple general, you know, strategies that are helpful for all the styles, like building awareness, knowing your style, and increasing metacognitive monitoring.
That's great. I mean, this is all practical stuff, because like you said, you describe the styles. You know, we can take that assessment in your book and figure out which way, which style we tend to have ourselves, and now ways to help ourselves become more secure. So listeners, you know, if this is all connecting the dots for you, just remember you can go online to like Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble's or something like that. And the title of the book, again, is The Four Relationship Styles by Dr. Anita Knight. But let's apply this even a little bit more. As I said earlier, you know, a lot of our listeners are either professors or, you know, graduate students who are going to be working with clients one day. How can counselors or maybe counselors in training use this book, The Four Relationship Styles, with clients?
Yeah, that's really important, right? Because the idea is to be able to apply this and sort of take all the, we know so much about research, but it doesn't really help us unless we can actively apply it in a practical way. So I appreciate that question. I think one way is to use the assessment in the book to identify their own attachment style. You know, it's interesting. I remember when I was going through my AAI training, learning that some adoption agencies in the Northeast only allowed social workers who had a secure attachment style in the AAI to work on cases with adoptive families. And so, you know, thankfully, you know, all counseling programs aren't monitoring whether students are secure before they're able to work with clients, but it is helpful to know our own style and to work towards optimizing our relationship style and becoming as high functioning as we can within our given style and moving towards increased security. So I think that that's maybe the first step, is working on our own style, taking the tests, identifying what it is, learning our strengths and challenges, and beginning that journey towards optimization. I'm not sure there's many counselors that are already working on that, but this may just be a new way of seeing it that opens up new doors. You know, we talk about reframing in counseling. We frame something a new way, can help us to see new possibilities. The second thing I would say is to work with clients and have them take the assessment as a part of maybe a battery of other assessments. Like you maybe use the Rosenberg self-esteem scale, which is a free 10-item reliable, valid self-esteem assessment. Maybe using like a Beck depression inventory. Maybe you're doing bibliotherapy and talking with them, you know, about the book that you wrote, Healthy Depression. And I think it kind of fits in context with some of those other strategies. But I would say, you know, starting giving them that assessment and then talking with them about their style and their results and how they see that showing up within their relationships, and kind of bringing awareness with that in the discussion, because it explains a lot. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't familiar with it, it can really open up some great insights, and can be something that as a counselor, we're working with people on moving towards that increased security. Then I would say if you do any work with couples, it can be really helpful to have both partners take the assessment and facilitate a dialogue between them to talk about their relationship styles and how they interact with one another. And sometimes there can be some really challenging dynamics, and we can sort of attract others who tend to reinforce our unhealthy beliefs about ourselves. And so bringing awareness to that and how that might create tension in the relationship can be helpful. And helping couples to talk about that, bring awareness, work through that and recognize that can be helpful as well. So I think those are some of the primary keys, is, you know, using the assessment personally with clients, with couples, and then kind of having a plan. When I went through the AAI training, I had a colleague from Holland, and she had been an attorney, and then she decided to get certified as an attachment interview coder, and her husband was a therapist. And so she would give them an attachment assessment at the beginning of therapy and then write up a report, and he would go over the results with them. Well, the scoring is in the books. You can easily score it and then talk about what that means with them and talk about their given chapter. And then her husband would work with the client through the course of therapy on trying to develop a more secure narrative. And then at the end of treatment, it would give them the assessment again to see if their attachment style has shifted. And so that's something that you can do as well, as you kind of, you can monitor and follow up and look for changes and shifts. Some of the items on the assessment measure anxiety and avoidance. So, of course, the more we move towards the networker style, where you move towards connecting, you have lower anxiety and lower avoidance. And so that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I know with classic attachment theory, they often talk about a more experiential application of it, like with the counselor being a transitional object for the client. Do you get into the whole idea of transitional objects in your book, or is it, do you focus more the attachment styles more so?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's, you know, more of the focus is on the styles, but I love that idea of the transitional object too, because the therapist is able to serve as Clinton and Sipsey in their book Attachments call the emotionally corrective experience. And we talk about that idea a little bit as well, that, you know, the therapist can create this sort of secure base and safe haven. When we look at what a child needs for attachment, they need someone to help them organize their feelings, someone to help them make sense of their experiences, someone to delight in them. And these are a lot of the things the therapist can do, right? Like even Carl Rogers talked about, you know, prizing our clients. So taking that delight, we help our clients process through and manage emotions. And so that's something that we can really help with, that can create that safety and, you know, enable the client to experience what it feels like to have more of a secure relationship and connection.
Well, that makes perfect sense, and that's great application. Let me just ask you one last question, because we're getting near that time, and I want to respect your time as well. You've covered a lot of ground, but I always try to ask sort of a catch-all question. And I guess what I'll ask you is, what have I not asked you today that you want the listeners to know about your book?
You know, I think one of the challenges, and thank you for asking that question, I think one of the challenges is in sometimes when we're working in a therapeutic setting, we tend to have to deal with insurance companies. We tend to have to give diagnostic codes, and there can be a tendency towards thinking from a pathological framework. And that's one of the things I actually really appreciate about your book, Healthy Depression. And specifically, one of the things you mentioned was, contrary to popular assumptions, depression could be a sign of health rather than sickness, letting people know that something is wrong and needs to be changed. You know, and I think that's a really important concept. And I think the same is true for attachment, that regardless of what your style is, that style helped you adapt and develop amidst the circumstances that you found yourself in. And you may be at a new junction in life where perhaps you want to use some different strategies and maybe move towards a different way of connecting or way of doing relationships. And I think one of the unique characteristics of the text is that it frames each of the styles as having these really unique, you know, strengths and challenges, and looks at each one as adaptive. Some people might talk about disorganized attachment. And there is some disorganization that happens, right? But also there's this concept that if you've been through trauma, it's not that there's something wrong with you. It's that there's something wrong with what happened to you, right? You are likely having a normal response to an abnormal situation. So there's a framing of each style in terms of looking at it from a strengths-based perspective, kind of having that metaphor in mind for what your style looks like. And at the end of the day, the goal is to give people hope, to be able to embrace where they are, because, of course, denial heals nothing, but also to light the path forward to be able to move to a more secure style, and to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and it's not an oncoming train.
That's a great analogy. Well, I love what you're saying. I mean, like, this is, it respects the ethics as well. Like, I mean, you're respecting client autonomy, one of our ethical principles that we try to live by. And you're respecting the fact that clients can make decisions that change their relational style. And they can make decisions to become more securely attached, even though it might go against the pattern that they're used to because of the way they were raised, like you said. So that makes perfect sense. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with the listeners about your book. And once again, it's Dr. Anita Knight, The Four Relationship Styles. Thank you for being on the podcast today, Anita. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Knapp. I really appreciate your insights as well. And I'm excited to continue reading this book, Healthy Depression. It's already had several light bulb moments and really enjoyed it. And so I highly recommend your book as well. And, you know, I just want to share one last thing with you. And that's this idea that, you know, Mr. Rogers said, and I'll just adapt it here, and that is, you've made this day a special day and this podcast a special podcast just by your being you. And there's no one else in the world like you, and I like you just the way you are. So thank you again for having me, and thank you guys for listening, and blessings.
Thank you so much. That's a great way to wrap it up. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today on the Mental Healthy Podcast. And we look forward to having you join us again next time. And thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.